The content here is for informational purposes only and should not be taken as medical advice. Please consult a healthcare professional with any medical questions and concerns.
If you are experiencing an emergency or need immediate help, call 911. In no way does listening, reading, emailing, or interacting on social media with our content establish a therapeutic relationship.
I just get so angry. It's hard to sit still.
I don't want to be this way.
My brain just feels all scrambled.
Welcome to Scrambled. This is Nikki, and I'm here with my co-host, Chad. And this is episode 65. I don't know why I lost that number there, but I did.
Well, it's been a while. It's been 2 weeks, actually, since we got this. But, you know, spoiler alert, behind the curtain, we record these in advance. It's not like we, you know, drop them live. Obviously, you know that. But, you know, it's been a while with the holidays and everything. So we're back at it, and we're glad to be back, and we're talking about a very important topic. And I do want to say too, here in 2024, we are so glad to have you still listening after 2.5 years of doing this and sharing this podcast with those who you think could benefit. We ask you if you're so willing to give us a positive rating and a positive review on Apple Podcasts. It really does help kind of move us up the algorithm, puts more eyes and ears on the podcast, and helps more people. And that's what we're all about. So there we go. Soapbox done.
Well, right before we started recording this episode, we were talking about how I never say anything on the episodes about, you know, reviewing or sharing. Mm-hmm. That Chad always does that message. So I just kind of want to back him up. We're on the same team here. we love it when people leave reviews. It makes it, you know, worthwhile to know that what we're doing is benefiting others, that other people are listening. So we're thankful to those that have, and we hope that more will leave us reviews over.
Absolutely.
Time.
So the last episode we left you with kind of introduced us to trauma. We had a guest, Mandy Harvey, who is a trauma healing expert, and she shared her really gut-wrenching story of her traumatic experience from when she was a little girl and how that has now helped her become kind of a trauma healer and helping other people deal with it. And so we're doing this whole, and I hate to even call it a series, it's a concentrated effort toward trauma and kind of talking about what trauma is, how you can heal from it, what trauma can do years down the road. And so that's what this episode is going to be. It's Trauma 101. When we first started this, we did Anxiety 101 and just kind of laid it out. Here's everything in general terms from anxiety. So we thought we'd do that with trauma. And so here we go, Nikki. What is trauma?
Trauma is essentially what happens after something extremely stressful or life-threatening happens that makes you feel unsafe. So it can be any number of things that can cause trauma. I'll list a couple here, but if you're human, you probably know there's a whole lot of things that can happen. Examples would be, you know, medical procedures. So, and that I bring that one up because a medical procedure is thought to be helpful, right? Like, could be life-saving. It could be, you know, routine. It could be just something you need to have to maintain your health, but it can be scary because maybe you are in pain or maybe you feel unsafe during this procedure or something like that. So a medical procedure can cause trauma. Humiliating events can cause trauma. A sudden loss in your life can cause trauma. Anybody who experiences violence, abuse, cruelty, those things can cause trauma. Witnessing a tragedy, being part of or witnessing a natural disaster, being in a car accident, witnessing a car accident. So I could go on and on with all the different scary things that can happen, but all of those are, you know, commonly connected to trauma-related symptoms, and that's what we're going to talk
then
about.
Then I have to ask, like, I'm assuming every 8 billion people on this planet, I don't think that was grammatically correct, but has had some experience of trauma in their life then.
I think it's fair to say that everyone experiences a trauma or multiple traumas along the way. But the difference is not everybody goes on to have a trauma-related disorder, right? Okay. So, and I think I'm glad we got here already because one of the most important things to know about it is just because you go through something scary or life-threatening, that does not mean that you will then have PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder or another disorder related to trauma. When bad things happen or when scary or life-threatening things happen, we are supposed to have a hard time with it, right? It is completely normal after an event to feel shaken, to feel scared, to feel threatened, to have a really hard time with it. When we get into where people get a diagnosis and where it's a problem is when those symptoms have lasted beyond what is a reasonable amount of time given what happened. And so many, many people experience traumatic events, but they don't go on to have a trauma-related disorder. they may be super resilient and have lots of supports and have a really good, you know, sort of narrative of the event in their mind that allows them to kind of move forward quickly and not get stuck in it. But some people don't have those things, or the trauma might be, you know, compounded by other events that have happened in their lives. And so then they kind of get stuck, right? It's when their body can't quite keep up with it. And so somebody who is experiencing trauma related symptoms beyond what would be expected, typically it, I kind of like to think of it as, you know, your nervous system kind of gets stuck in the trauma, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't have the ability to kind of regulate and go back to before the thing happened. And so those are folks who might go on to then be diagnosed with a trauma-related disorder and need some kind of clinical treatment.
So let's clarify a little thing here, at least in my head, because I'm going to say trauma is going to be relative based on who you are and how you're made up. For example, we've talked about in previous episodes that you got violently ill in first grade in mm-hmm. front of a bunch of kids, and that was a traumatic experience for you, and that mm-hmm. that bothered you for years. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting here looking back at my life going, okay, I've had some medical procedures. I've certainly in the news business witnessed horrific things, but I've never looked at that as traumatic. Mm-hmm. Does that, so I guess it is relative. It undoubtedly was mm-hmm. a traumatic event, but I was able to process it in the reasonable amount of time to yep. move on.
And based on so many different factors, it could be your genetics, it could be your other life experiences, it could be what was going on around, you know, that same event. It could be, you know, your like support system at the time has helped you. But like what you said is it truly is relative. I think the reason that my getting sick in the first grade became kind of a trauma for me and has created problems later in my life is because there was like the first time, and then it happened again and yeah. again and again. And every time that I would become sick in that way, there would be something scary that would make me feel out of control or unsafe. And so then that has kind of compounded in my brain that anything that reminds me of those experiences feels unsafe. And so then I feel like a little bit panicked, or I have symptoms. Now, to be fair, you know, we've kind of talked about my particular struggle in the realm of phobia, you know, but it kind of started as a traumatic event that turned into that. And that's mm-hmm. a little bit different than where we're going mm-hmm. in this episode. Somebody who has PTSD or a trauma-related disorder has, you know, experienced the event. They've been through the period of time where it would be normal and natural to struggle. And now they're at the point where it's interfering with their lives. It's interfering with their ability to function, causing problems at work and home. And it is now, you know, it now like qualifies as a clinical disorder. Yeah. But you can have, kind of taking it back to your original point, you can go through stuff that's scary and not have trauma from it. Ultimately, trauma is an individual thing. And while we may all experience trauma, not all of us will go on to have a trauma-related disorder. And so what we want to talk about in this episode is, what are some reasons why you might go on to have a trauma-related disorder? How would you know if you have that? What kind of treatments are available? And what are some things you can do if you've experienced a trauma, whether it's a disorder or not?
Absolutely. So before we get into that, then where does trauma come from, other than traumatic events? Like, I've heard that babies can have traumatic events even before they're born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've mentioned that in previous episodes, that like pre-verbal trauma or pre-birth trauma, things that happen when an infant is still in the womb can impact that child's nervous system. And so if you kind of take it back to what I was saying just a little bit ago, that trauma kind of, it's a traumatic disorder sort of lives in your nervous system. Mm-hmm. An infant can experience, you know, life-threatening things, an infant that hasn't even been born yet, and that impacts how they function in their life. And so it can come from, you know, before birth, anytime during your lifespan, you can become a victim of trauma at any time. You don't ever age out of the possibility of that happening, which is
sure
super dark and heavy.
Yeah, but it's also realistic or realistic, you know, it's also real. I think a lot of people, at least myself, think of trauma as something huge that's happened. You mentioned PTSD a couple of minutes ago, and I think that was brought to light with the military and the wars mm-hmm. back in the early 2000s and such, soldiers coming back and having post-traumatic stress disorder. And it doesn't just happen to military personnel. It's mm-hmm. it's just something that they kind of made it more common knowledge. Mm-hmm. So what is PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder?
So as you said, it definitely became, you know, people in the mental health world became more aware of it when we started to see veterans come back and experiencing similar symptoms related to what they experienced while they were, you know, in combat or deployed. And so, yes, it started there, but we know now that PTSD can be caused by all kinds of different things. And ultimately, post-traumatic stress disorder, it's when you have flashbacks, nightmares, you avoid things that remind you of the event, whatever it was that was traumatic. You might feel sort of detached or numb. You might be extra tense or jumpy or irritable. You might have negative thoughts. Your mood might be bad, might have some depression symptoms. You're going to have reduced focus, memory problems. And the thing about it is, like any other diagnosis, you don't have to have every single one of those features that I just listed to get the diagnosis. You would just need a certain number of them. And it's, you know, it, when you're trying to figure out if somebody has a trauma related disorder, if the difficulties that they're reporting all kind of go back to or are connected to something that happened in their life that was life threatening or potentially life threatening.
So here's a weird story, and this is very minor on the trauma meter, although it is relative, correct? So 10 years ago, almost 11 years ago, my daughter was born 10 and a half weeks early, very traumatic. Clearly worst day of my life, right? So she was in a NICU 2.5 hours away from our town. She was in St. Louis. And so my wife and I would go down there, and we had a friend who gave us their apartment when we went, and everything was very nice. And every day we'd go down there, we would go to Panera Bread, which is St. Louis Bread Company in St. Louis. They're very particular about that. And I would get a coffee, and I would get a tomato bagel, basil sandwich, mozzarella, like, you know, thing, whatever, is really good. So she gets discharged, and months later, I go to our local Panera Bread. I'm like, you know, I haven't had one of those for a while. I took one bite into it, and it brought me back to the time in the NICU. And I like almost couldn't finish the sandwich. I've never had one since, because it was just that, like you said, brings back visions and stuff. And I again, a very minor, because if you've served in war and experienced some sort of traumatic event, you wake up with nightmares or night terrors and stuff, totally different. But just to kind of relate, I guess that's I think I've heard the sense of taste is like one of the first things that will bring somebody back.
Yeah. Taste, smell, sound, any number of things can kind of take you back to something that your mind might have compartmentalized or set aside. Oh my God. Can we talk about the brain for a minute? I love talking about the brain. Can we do that?
No, let's move on to my next question.
Okay. Now we're going to talk about the brain. So there's this part of the brain called the amygdala. And the amygdala's job is really just to kind of keep track of all of the crappy, scary, frightening things that happen, so that like, when we face those things again, we're aware and we go, oh, that sucked. We don't want to do that anymore, right? It's super good at its job, right? It's super good. And it can, like, when it's overly successful at its job, that's when we can start to see people experiencing trauma or having like these flashbacks or these memories that pop up. They're like, oh my God, I hadn't thought about that in a long time.
Yeah.
Because that part of your brain goes, wait a minute, danger, alert. So now your brain is telling you, your amygdala is like, wait a minute, this sandwich was from a really, nope, you don't, that flavor was from a time. We don't want to go back there. Remember
right.
That was terrible. Let's not do that. So the brain is so good at protecting us and trying to keep us safe that sometimes it kind of like gets in its own way and it can trip us up. And that's kind of the nature of trauma is if you haven't fully dealt with something or you've had something that nearly ended your life or ended the life of someone else, it is really great that your amygdala and your brain remember all those details to try to protect you from other things. But the unfortunate part is we can't avoid those triggers all the time, right? They're in our everyday lives and we have to learn to deal with it. And so that takes us back to our central nervous system, which is we have to learn to regulate that. And we have to learn to be able to go, oh, okay. So the reason I'm feeling this way is because I smelled this or saw that or heard that. And it reminds me of this thing that happened that was really frightening, but that thing isn't happening right now. And I'm going to ground myself and I'm going to get through this and I am safe. Right. And that's that sort of self-regulation piece is such an important part of treatment. But it looks a lot of different ways. And we'll talk about treatment a little later on in the episode, but that's kind of at the heart of it, that amygdala.
Well, maybe this is the amygdala's job too, but what's the difference in having, okay, so you take a bite of that bagel and it takes you back to a traumatic time and is unhappy versus being at TJ Maxx and picking up a candle and smelling it going, man, this is what my resort smelled like on my honeymoon. It brought back good memories.
So the ultimate function of the amygdala isn't just to remember all the bad things that happened. It kind of helps you process all the sensory information that comes in. And so it not only remembers that, you know, tomato basil sandwich that you ate when your daughter was in the NICU, it also remembers, you know, the smell of, what did you say a minute ago? It was a candle.
A candle at TJ Maxx. It smelled like the resort in Mexico where we honeymooned. I don't know.
Yeah. So like that's just it. It helps you to process all that information. And it then like figures out like what motivations or what behaviors should come out of that sensory experience. And so your amygdala works really well, right? It's cueing you into both the good and the bad. And it's just when we get stuck in the bad or we have a hard time taking back control over our nervous system in response to one of those sensory things, that's kind of at the heart of a trauma disorder is when we're stuck in that cycle.
And can you block out trauma to where you don't remember it? It seems like, you know, I see that in movies and stuff where years and years later, the person realizes they had some traumatic event in their childhood and it was brought up through therapy or something. Is that like,
so cool? I don't want to go too deep into that because I'm certainly by no means an expert on this idea of repressing things or blocking things out. But I do think our brain does a really good job of trying to protect us in lots of ways. And so sometimes it will file away really, really scary things in a place that maybe we can't quite get to yet because we're not ready for it. Like I think sometimes when young kids go through something they're not like supposed to go through, really scary stuff, sometimes I think that can get sort of set aside or sort of compartmentalized in a way that they don't deal with it until later when maybe they're old enough or have the capacity to deal with it. And so I think that can happen. There are a lot of, you know, there's a lot of really great work and research out there on that kind of thing. And I'm not privy to all of it, but sure. I do think the brain is powerful. I had an experience and I hope I've never told this story before on the podcast. So tell me if it's a rerun, but I'd been in an accident when I was probably 16 or 17. It was really icy and I rear-ended another vehicle because I tried to stop and couldn't. And the accident took place and an ambulance came and all this stuff was going on. And I thought I was fine and I didn't have any memory of getting hurt. I just was like, oh, everybody's okay. But then my friend was like, what's on your head? And I was growing a unicorn horn. It was a huge bump and I had no memory of hitting my head. And I was like, that's really weird. How do I not notice that I like smashed my head hard enough to have like a huge bump? Years and years later, like probably 15, 20 years later, I was leaving a grocery store and two cars in front of me crashed. Like I witnessed an accident. And when the two cars crashed, that sound of metal, it made me relive my accident. Like I remembered hitting my head. I had no memory at no point, but that sound brought me right back to the moment when my head hit the steering wheel. And I had to like pull over and regroup. And I was like, oh my God, that was so weird. In the field I'm in, like I wasn't scared. I was fascinated. Yeah, I was like, wow, the brain is so cool. And I finally have a memory of how I hit my head. But like, that's not always the case. Like people aren't always fascinated by the things their brain can do. Yeah. And that can become a very overwhelming sensory experience to relive something you haven't dealt with for 20 years. And so that's kind of the thing with trauma too, is if you do happen to put something away when it happens and you don't really deal with it, it can come back later and it can cause you problems later in your life.
And so like what kind of conditions can develop later in life from a traumatic experience?
Well, and I would say conditions might not be the word I would use there. It'd be more like if you, you know, as a child, if your trauma was like neglect and not being well cared for and maybe some emotional verbal abuse or physical abuse, it might lead to you not trusting other people in your adult life.
Okay.
Right. So if, you know, that sort of trauma, it's harder to see in the moment the impact that it might have, but it's definitely going to impact how you relate to others. And so then later on in life, you might have some relationship issues that come from, and that's just one example.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. But you can also develop like anxiety or,
oh, sure.
Something
yes.
like that from yes. just from anxiety, a traumatic experience.
Depression. Yep. Those things can surface later. And if it's, you know, if it has like the flashbacks and the nightmares and the avoidance and all those other things that I had listed, then we're looking at like PTSD or something similar. But if it's, you know, you don't have those things, you just have the mood or the anxiety symptoms, then, you know, it could be depression and anxiety that's rooted in a previous situation, but you might not be like reliving the trauma or having, you know, the nightmares about it. There are several, I feel like now might be a good time to share. There are several different disorders used today for trauma related symptoms. Okay. And I'm not going to like bore everyone with a super lengthy description of these just because I think, you know, we all have Google and we can look it up if we want to know more, but
yeah, that's a good idea. Let's Google some health conditions.
Yeah, maybe don't actually. I take that back. Don't Google it. Let me just tell you what you need to know. So we've already talked about PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder, and the one that we probably have heard the most about. Mm-hmm. It is, you know, it can be diagnosed at any age. We also have acute stress disorder, which is when it does, it's like when your trauma symptoms are, haven't really been in place long enough to meet the criteria for PTSD. It's more acute. It's more like you're having a stress response to something that just happened. I do not have in front of me the book that breaks down the timeline, but I kind of think it's a 30-day thing. Like if in 30 okay. days of the trauma, you're experiencing some distressing emotions related to it, then it would be considered acute stress disorder. Okay. Secondhand trauma. I don't know that there's a specific, I need to kind of check myself here. I don't know that there's a specific diagnosis for that. It might be a way of categorizing trauma-related disorders, but secondhand trauma would be like if you watch someone else experience something and you're having trauma symptoms related to that. Hmm. You can also get secondhand trauma, you know, as like a therapist or someone providing treatment for someone. Like you can kind of absorb their stuff. So secondhand trauma is another way of experiencing trauma. Reactive attachment disorder, it kind of relates to the example we gave of kids who grow up, you know, in unhealthy situations or scary situations who then go on to have trouble trusting others. Reactive attachment disorder is common in kids who, you know, don't have a healthy attachment with their primary caregiver, who don't know how to healthily attach to other people in their lives. And so they might be overly attached to strangers or totally inhibited and not, you know, not open up to anybody. And that can cause kind of a pattern of all kinds of symptoms and problematic behaviors in a kid's life. But that is usually rooted in the trauma of having, you know, a broken, you know, situation with your caregiver. Disinhibited social engagement disorder. It's similar to reactive attachment. It has to do with those early bonds and interactions. And it can lead to having difficulty regulating your social relationships and connecting with other people. The other one, and this is probably used, I would say, more often than a lot of these others, just because it does capture a lot, and it gives you time, like it gives clinicians or psychiatrists time to kind of figure out what else might be going on. And that is adjustment disorder. So an adjustment disorder is just a way of saying that a person is having symptoms related to something that's happened in their life. It doesn't have to be a trauma to be an adjustment disorder. It could be you moved to a new school. It could be that you got married. It could be that you know, lost your job. But like something in your life has created some difficulty. And so a lot of times you'll see that. And then as we get to know folks more, or we dig in a little deeper, or we have a better understanding of what's going on, then you might see the diagnosis updated to reflect a more clear trauma-related disorder. And then last but not least, there's a category called other and unspecified trauma and stressor related disorders. And that's just meaning all those things that humans can go through that don't fit neatly into another category.
It's like the catch-all.
Yeah. So if, you know, somebody maybe only has one or two symptoms of PTSD, but they're definitely having symptoms and it definitely relates to a trauma, then they might get this other or unspecified disorder. But it's, you know, it's just, it's all in the experience of the person. For me, it's not so much what you call it. It's like, what is it and what are we going to do about it?
Right. What are some of the symptoms of whether it's PTSD or acute stressor syndrome or anything that people need to look for?
So the primary things to look for would be, you know, if you're having flashbacks, nightmares, reliving an experience that has happened in the past, refusing to talk about or, you know, avoiding certain people, situations, places because they remind you, feeling, you know, disconnected or numb, being overly tense, jumpy, irritable. I know I said some of these before, but just because they all can kind of show up in each of those disorders that we just talked through. Like you said before, depression, anxiety, problems with focusing, memory problems. There's lots of different things that can show up that can suggest you're having more than just a natural response to an unnatural or difficult situation. And the key with diagnosis, again, is always like, does it happen in every setting? Does it continue for a length of time beyond what would be considered normal? Just because you have a hard time in the weeks following something really big doesn't mean you have a disorder. It just means you're dealing with something that was really hard. But if 6 months after something happened, you're still having a lot of symptoms, that's usually a pretty good indicator.
And this was going to ask, as you said, a certain amount of time, but there's probably nothing textbook that says after you witness a car accident, you've got 30 days to process it. Or, you know, after some sort of abuse, you've got 90 days to process it. It's just, it's kind of, again, all relative. But how do you know, you know, I had something traumatic happen to me 6 months ago. I should have processed it by now, or am I still in the green zone?
And again, time, I think, is tricky. Like, there are some timelines for diagnostics that clinicians might use to differentiate and determine, you know, is this PTSD? Is this acute stress disorder? Is this, you know, a normal thing? But it really is, how much problem is it causing in your life? It doesn't matter how long ago it was. You could have someone 30 years after an incident still struggling. And that's just as much of a concern and just as, you know, like warranting of treatment and acknowledgement as somebody who is, you know, 2 months past something really scary that happened. It's no less real. It's no less, you know, causing issues just because it's been longer. So
if you have a kiddo who's experienced some sort of traumatic event, whether when they were younger or currently, how open should they be with other people, teachers, coaches, you know, whatnot of, you know, maybe walk a little lighter around this person because they're dealing with this, or what do you do?
And I think it's going to depend on the kiddo and the scenario. Like, I think you could have a child who had a traumatic thing and nobody else really has to know much about it because they are managing it and they know what they're doing and they're getting the help that they need in the setting they need it. But I think it's anybody who's working closely with a child should be at least a little bit aware of what's going on. Okay. And so if you've got a child that's, you know, been diagnosed with a trauma related concern, or even if they haven't yet been diagnosed, because that's the hard thing, is it's kind of a gray area. Like, you can have a child who's actively still going through something traumatic, right? Many kids in many classrooms never been diagnosed with a trauma, but they are living one every day. Mm. Right. And so when you know, and you know, if the people in that child's life are aware of what's going on, communication about what they're seeing, how it's working, what helps that child to be successful, that needs to be happening, right? I think the unfortunate, you know, part of that is that for many of those kids, we don't know yet, right? And we'll talk about this in a future episode, but lots of times trauma looks like other things, right? So you might have a kid who's super fidgety and all over the place, and you think, oh, that kid's got ADHD. There's no doubt about it. But maybe that kid had something really terrible happen, and his trauma symptoms are actually causing him to be fidgety and distracted and hyperactive because, you know, it's just his nervous system can't settle down after whatever it was. So, and we'll get into that. We have a great guest coming to talk with us about that in a future episode, but it could look a lot of different ways in the classroom. Yeah. And so back to your original question, which is, if you're aware of a diagnosis and there are adults working with that child one-on-one in other settings, they should probably be aware. But if it's, you know, you also have to mind the child and the child's age and developmental level. If the kid doesn't want other people to know, you have to kind of work with them on that, right? Yeah. Like, privacy is important too.
Let's move into treatment. And it's like it's a constant tease toward future episodes, but we're going to do an episode on specific treatments and stuff. In general, trauma can be treated. And what are some avenues to get that done?
The most simple approach to treatment for now, I will say, is medication that can treat the symptoms. So depression, anxiety, trouble sleeping, tension, irritability, those are things that can be treated with medications. CBT and variants of CBT. So CBT is cognitive behavioral therapy.
And there are, please clarify.
You're like, what the heck is that?
CBT versus CBD. Yes.
It's not. I mean, I suppose CBD could help some, but I'm not here to recommend that. But CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, is a type of therapy that helps us to, like, change problematic thoughts that are contributing to our distress. And so there are many, many different CBT approaches related to trauma. There's one called trauma-focused CBT. There's something called CPT. There's a lot of different things that you can use, different therapeutic approaches. And so essentially therapy is that one. And then I don't want to say like that it's newer, but there's another specific type of therapy that's often recommended for people with trauma-related.
Ooh, can
symptoms.
Can I guess?
Yes, go for it.
Is it EMDR?
It sure is. All right. It sure is. So it's been around a long time, but it's really been, you know, popular lately. There are a lot of therapists getting trained and certified in EMDR, and it has shown in studies that it can help people to feel better pretty quickly. Like, it really can have a positive impact on symptoms pretty quickly. So medication to treat symptoms, CBT or variants of CBT, and EMDR are the main approaches to treatment.
What does EMDR stand for? What's the acronym? Or the acronym is EMDR. What?
It's eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And it was originally used to treat PTSD, but it still is, but it's also being used in lots of different therapeutic situations. I'm seeing it used for lots of different disorders, diagnoses, and symptom sets. So it's very promising, and you pretty much anywhere you are, you can probably find a therapist who specializes in EMDR.
Interesting. And I think made popular a couple of years ago by Prince Harry, who did, yes. And we've talked about this, the documentary on Apple TV Plus, The Me You Can't See. And he talks about when he was 12, his mother, Princess Diana, died in the car crash. And years later, he did this EMDR therapy, and it's really helped him to process it. And I will say, too, without going through a whole lot of detail, I have witnessed it firsthand. Amazing. How it works. So we'll talk about EMDR in a later episode down the line. Told you we got a lot of good stuff planned for 2024 when it comes to trauma. That's why we don't like to call it a series. It's just a concentrated effort because we don't know how many episodes we're going to do on it. We just think it's important to get it out there. And I, for one, find it fascinating. Like we said, what the brain can do and what can handle and how it processes things. So I do have another odd question, and I'm trying to think how to phrase it, Nikki. Can you use traumatic experience for good? Can you turn it into something good? And I'll give you an example, and it's a personal example, and I hate giving too many of those. But again, going back to my daughter's time in the NICU, I think for me to help myself process that trauma, in my job in the TV business, I started doing more specific stories related to illnesses and things. I mean, I did the two-part series on what we do here, childhood anxiety, and I did stories on miscarriage and infant mortality and cancer in children and stuff. And that kind of helped me process through. And I think what it was me talking to other parents who had lived in a traumatic situation, but at the same time, getting the word out that this stuff does happen and hopefully helping those families heal and get some community support and stuff. So that was kind of the reasoning for my questioning was, you know, is that possible that you take a traumatic experience and make it good?
I think it is incredibly possible, and it happens all the time. And I think some of the folks who have the best outcomes following a traumatic event are the ones that use it for good, that they identify something in it and they kind of turn it into a strength and a way of helping the community or helping other people. And I see those folks healing faster and getting a sense of purpose back quicker. And so I think it's really good. I want to be careful not to say, you know, like, oh, everything that is hard or everything that you go through that's bad for you or hard for you or difficult for you, you know, teaches you something or makes you stronger. Well, that may be the case, but that's really not very validating to a child who's been horribly abused, right? Like they shouldn't have had to go through that to learn that they're strong.
Right.
And so I want to be careful not to say that like, it's good for you. It's not okay. These things shouldn't happen. But when they do, and part of a person's recovery or healing process is helping others or doing something good or finding meaning in it, I do think that they have a much better outcome and they're more easily able to get past that. And I've seen so many friends and family members and people in our community who take something really traumatic or difficult for them and they turn it around and they find good in it and they help others and they make a difference in the world. And I think that that's one of the most beautiful things that can come from trauma. If there is anything good to come from it is, you know, that we then become, you know, much more empathetic and much more likely to want to help others who might go through something similar. And so, yes, I think it can help. And I think that is part of resilience for many, many people.
Let's go back to types of trauma. We hit on PTSD and acute stressors and stuff like that. But is there like a Richter scale of sorts for levels of trauma? And if you don't know, Richter scale is how they determine how bad an earthquake is. Or Fujita scale, if you want to do tornadoes, whatever. Is there a barometer for types of trauma? How about
there, that? There is. There is. And I'm so glad because it would be so disappointing and anticlimactic if I was like, no.
You know, there's not. Yeah.
It's all just the same. It's best lead into a question ever. So trauma can be categorized in a lot of different ways, but most trauma professionals are going to think of it in this way. There's acute trauma, which is, you know, sort of a thing that just happened. The event just took place. It's intense right now, right? So then the next type would be chronic trauma. And that's when, you know, the trauma really never ends. It just somebody's experience just continuously traumatic or difficult. And it's very closely related to a term called complex trauma. And that's, you know, something where the traumas are interconnected and maybe happening over and over and over again. So somebody in a domestic violence situation where there's been multiple episodes or a child who's been neglected and physically abused and emotionally abused and sexually abused and all these different things, those, you know, chronic and complex are terms that can be used to describe those really difficult situations that don't really have an end. And unfortunately, so many of the kids that we encounter have experienced chronic or complex trauma because they're still actively living in the traumatic situation when we're trying to treat it, you know. That's a very complicated thing to do. And then secondary trauma, which we did talk about a little bit ago when we were talking about secondhand trauma, and secondary trauma is that idea of like you experiencing trauma because of someone else's trauma and kind of, you know, having a hard time. And so you see that in healthcare providers and mental health providers and family members.
Emergency workers, I would assume.
Anybody who sees others go through trauma and then lives with that. A parent who discovers that their child has been sexually abused by someone or finds out that their child has been assaulted in some way, they have probably a secondary trauma response to that. And that would be a pretty natural response there. So those are the different ways of kind of looking at trauma.
When is it time to reach out for some help?
So as we said, anytime you aren't sure, is this normal? Is there something wrong? What should we do? How do I handle this? Like those questions should all be, yes, it is time to ask, time to reach out, talk to your pediatrician, talk to your family care provider, reach out to a mental health professional that you know, or a local mental health office. It is never not a good idea to check on it if you think there's the possibility. You know, what sometimes can happen, because we'll have this in our clinic when folks come in and their child has just been through something and the parents are so worried that their child is going to develop, you know, a trauma-related disorder because of the event. But sometimes it's too soon to tell. And if the child is doing really well and has healthy supports and they're able to discuss what happened, they may not need treatment right away. They may, you know, parents might need some tips or some guidance on what to watch for and how to navigate, but it might not require immediate treatment. And I think that can be really hard for folks. I know that, you know, we've gotten more comfortable with seeking mental health care today, and that's a wonderful thing, but some things don't require it right away. Sometimes you don't need it. Sometimes it's just natural when you lose someone or you go through something really scary or you have a frightening life event, you're supposed to have a hard time. And it doesn't mean you automatically need to get enrolled in therapy and start taking medication. But if you're not sure and you feel like you're struggling and you're having trouble functioning at home or at school, at work, you know, in multiple settings, you should talk with your doctor and find out what he or she thinks might be, you know, the next right step for you.
Is there like some sort of self-care that you can do? Exercise or sure. Meditation? Okay.
Yes, those two things are great. Yes.
It's like a password. Let me think of some other things.
So if you think back to what we were saying before about trauma being kind of like getting stuck in your nervous system, that your body can't re-regulate from the scary or traumatic event, working on your nervous system, taking care of your physical body is one of the best ways to get started. So movement, exercise, might be a dirty word to some people, but moving your body is a really important way.
Not this time of year, everybody's on it.
Yeah, exactly. Happy New Year, go to the gym for 2 weeks. But movement, exercise, physical activity, those are things that can help your nervous system to heal. Learning to regulate kind of your emotions, with that process I kind of walked through earlier where of like, oh, I feel like this because I remembered that, because I smelled that, and now I'm going to use grounding techniques and I'm going to breathe and I'm going to get through this. And, you know, learning to self-regulate your nervous system is really the key to learning to overcome, you know, some of these traumatic things. And then don't isolate. I think after something happens or if somebody's dealing with trauma related symptoms, sometimes our tendency, or even depression and anxiety can do this. Our tendency is like to hole up in our little cocoon and not go out and not be around people. And you know, people are bad and I don't want to go places. That's one of the worst things you could do because you get stuck in a very dysfunctional series of thoughts and beliefs and feelings. And you just, it's hard to get out of it at that point. So don't isolate. And then
guilty. Okay.
You're like, check. And then healthy habits. Foreshadowing? We're going to talk a lot about healthy habits in 2024 because I read a book. And you know what happens when I read a book, Chad?
Yeah.
I get ideas.
We get episode ideas. Yeah.
That's right. And that's a good thing. So, but healthy habits regarding what you eat and sleeping patterns and, you know, just basic daily self-care, keeping yourself in a routine, that is so important after something traumatic or difficult happens in your life. or if you know that you're struggling with PTSD, if you have been in a military situation and you know that that's what's going on for you, having a routine is one of the best ways to start to kind of anchor yourself and start to feel more regulated, even if you still, you know, are needing to get into work with a professional on this. Some of the stuff you can do on your own is take care of your body, have some routines, have some healthy habits, just build those things in and focus on those, because those things are going to help you have the strength and the willpower to go on and do the other stuff.
Well, Nikki, we've certainly teased a bunch of episodes coming up, but I want to tell you our next episode, episode 66, is a specific episode about how trauma can present itself in children. We alluded to it a little earlier, and we have a guest, a returning guest, if I'm not mistaken, our very first returning guest, Dr. Jessica Patel. So as always, we thank you for listening and sharing these episodes. Our whole goal in starting this podcast was to start a conversation, and that conversation continues with you.